parties are a lot of fun, but throwing a party takes a lot of time and money. A Bash in a Box helps you plan an event like a professional. You can get everything from invitations, banners, and decorations all custom designed and in one place. We offer party packs for your events so you can enjoy your time instead of being stressed. If you have a custom theme, we will design it for you. Visit abashinthebox.com and start celebrating.
Welcome to this week's edition of Debriefing the Law. I am Joel Oster.
I'm Chris Marone.
Hey, Chris, I hope you can hold my hand during today's episode, because as soon as we get done, I am headed to the dentist. I am always as scared of going to the dentist. I have this approach to the dentist. Tell me if this works well.
Okay.
Hey. I do the 1 minute power floss minutes as I'm heading out the door. Uh-huh. Do you think that's going to make a difference with the dentist?
Not even a little bit. Look, man, I hate flossing. I hate flossing, and I don't know why. But my dentist suckered me into buying one of those water pick things.
Yes.
That
does it work?
I don't know. Maybe. I have lots of problems with the dentist. I think it's a scam. I love my dentist. Don't get me wrong. She's a wonderful woman. But every time I go and see her, and I go and see her every 6 months because my wife makes the appointment. And every time she's like, if you don't take care of your teeth, you're going to have a heart attack. And I'm like, I don't see the correlation.
No. Well,
if you have bad teeth, you're going to have a heart attack and die. I feel you're overselling that.
Now I get your point, and I'm with you. But there is a correlation between bad teeth and heart attack. And if you think about it, your mouth is the portal to everything in your digestive tract, right? It all enters through your mouth. So if you have bacteria, crap in your teeth. But here's my point on why I agree with you. That's bogus. You're going to the dentist every 6 months. This isn't like over there in Britain where they only have two teeth left by the end of their life, right? Yep. You are getting your teeth taken care of by going to the dentist every 6 months. So yeah, it's important, but do you really need to floss every day?
Oh my gosh. I have a guy that I go to church with, and he's a dentist, and his line is, you brush your teeth at night to save your teeth. You brush your teeth in the morning to save your friends. And you always floss. And I'm just like, I mean, that's witty. It's witty. I'll give it to you. But no.
No. All right.
No.
Well, you know what? I also am fearful because my wife just went last week. And her portrait hangs there at the dentist office, a dental patient of the month. They give her accolades, standing ovations. They give her treats when she walks in. When I walk in, you can hear the moaning and groaning coming from the dental hygienist section. And they're all ordering masseuses for later that day. I guess.
Right.
I don't know. But you know what? I walk out of there with clean teeth, a clean bill, and an appointment for 3 months later. My point is, they want to see me every 3 months because they love me that much. They want to keep seeing me.
They love that Joel dollar.
Yeah. For my wife, it's like, oh no, we don't want to see you for another 6 months. So I think I'm the more favored patient. At least that's my take on it. But again, that is what I have to look forward to once we get done talking about Trump. So hey, it's going to be a great day. Hey, but first, this podcast is brought to you by Comedian of Law. We do CLEs that educate and entertain, and we're going to do it on the cruise. And so if you are looking for a vacation this next year, let's go to Athens, Greece. Let's take a cruise around the Mediterranean, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Check out our website. There are still a few seats left on this boat, so check that out. All right, Chris.
You know, Joel, it blows my mind how popular this cruise is. Like, when you first told me you were going to do a CLE cruise, I was like, ooh, that's a reach. That's going to be a tough sell. But seeing the response to people, it's going to be a really great time.
It is going to be a lot of fun. And we are so much fun that we are going to be now doing this every year. So I've been planning out the next two cruises now. We got Alaska. I'm worried about Alaska. I don't like Alaska. But if I'm going to take a cruise, there's going to be a lot of swimsuits involved, right? That's my view of a cruise. Going up to Alaska, to me, is the antithesis of cruising. That being said, it's not about me. It's about who wants to go with me. And apparently, other people really enjoy going to Alaska. And, Chris, you know, someone told me.
We're doing an Alaskan cruise this year, my wife and I.
You are.
So we're leaving. actually, the reason why we can't go on the Mediterranean cruise is because we're going on an Alaska cruise.
Okay, so everything I just said about people who go on Alaska cruise, just forget I said that. I didn't.
No, no, I agree with you. I really agree with you. But here's the and I don't know which one we've picked yet, so I'm not there with that. The one that my wife and I picked, I'm already not a fan of, and this is the only reason why I'm not a fan. I have to fly into Vancouver, which I love. I love Vancouver, great city. We cruise out of Vancouver up to Seward, Alaska.
Okay.
And then we have to drive from Seward up to Anchorage and fly out of Anchorage back to Phoenix.
It is a beautiful place there. I've been to Seward a couple Absolutely of times. Not gorgeous. Nebraska, but also Seward, Alaska. Both the Sewards. I have gorgeous a plant in Seward, Nebraska. It is an amazing place. Gorgeous. Absolutely. I mean, with that beautiful mountain, go up the top of that mountain there. It's the ski resort there in Seward. Yep. But gorgeous. They're not wearing swimsuits.
Well, and the flights really bother me because I'm flying one airline into Canada and then I have to fly another airline back home. There, you try to do this multi-city airline booking thing and they just absolutely price gouge the heck out of you.
Oh,
my flights are more than the cost of the cruise.
Well, we're going to go to Alaska. We're planning on going to Alaska sometime in the near future because I've heard from other attorneys that that's what they Beautiful like to do. And yep also, you mentioned you were surprised on how well this CLE panned out. Here's the reason yeah why. Someone told me, Joel, it's not about you. See, I thought, nope, why would anyone pay that amount of money to go on a CLE cruise? That doesn't make any sense. He said, Joel, it's a vacation that they yes didn't get to expense. That's why you do the CLE cruise. How much of it is deductible? That's between you, God, and the IRS. I am not going to comment on that, but I do know a portion of it is. All of my part is. So I'm definitely glad, happy about that because I'm working the entire time. But that being said, hey, it's going to be a lot of fun. Check out our cruise. And then also, I think the third cruise is going to be the ABC Islands. Aruba,
Ooh,
Curacao, and then Bonaire. And Bonaire is probably one of my favorite places to go in the entire world. Ooh. You can go to an Love island it there, which we did. You can swim around. This is an uninhabited island. No one has ever even put a shovel down on this island. It's kind of Gilligan's Island. It's a great okay place to go. And you can go there snorkeling off the coast of it. It is a lot of fun. So that being said, check out our website for future cruises.
Absolutely. All right.
We are going to talk a lot about Trump today. So if you love Trump, hate Trump, today's podcast is for you because the Supreme Court talked about Trump. TikTok has been all about this Trump trial. So there's a lot to talk about. But first, Chris, I thought it'd be fun to just go into the annals. I hope that's the right word. I didn't butcher that. Of the legal history. And let's have a wacky case segment. All right. Wacky crazy case of the week is going to be Costanza v. Seinfeld. Oh, are you a Seinfeld yeah fan?
Not as dedicated a fan as most other people. I've watched Seinfeld. I enjoyed it, but I'm not fanatical about it. And Chris, every once in a while, I'll come into the office and I'll be like, hello, and nobody will get it.
Chris, you used to be a friend of mine. I'm just going to let That's you true know that.
That's cool.
There was a point in time when we were friends. We were. No longer. What do you mean, Seinfeld, you could pass on it? The greatest sitcom in the history of the world. And you said you could pass on it.
I mean, subjectively? I mean, it's just a show, man. It's just a show.
All right, I think you're a Seinfeld aficionado. You're just playing. I'm downplaying it. All right, so let me test you here. All right, so let's say that you go order soup, and
no soup for you.
Exactly.
You come back 1 year.
All right.
Come on, man. That's iconic, though.
All right. How about this one? Go on. Let's say you go to a bathroom and there's no toilet paper. What do you ask your stall mate if that situation occurred?
I have no idea. This All is right where my Seinfeld knowledge fails me.
Can you spare a square is a famous Seinfeld episode. Can you spare a square? And apparently the lady who shared but was a stall neighbor to Elaine could not spare a square. And that became an episode of another Seinfeld. Let's see if I can pull up another one. Oh, the contest. Tell me you remember the contest.
No.
I'm not going to go into details on the contest. But okay, I'll try to go into details, but this will be difficult because I'm trying to keep this rated clean. But the four of them all had a contest as to who could hold out the longest.
And
the idea that there was a lady who was kind of sunbathing across the way, maybe sunbathing to get the maximum amount of her body suntanned, if you will. And so Kramer comes in, slaps down the $100 and says, I am out of the contest. And I have no idea who actually won that contest. I'm going to guess it was Seinfeld, but that is just a guess. All right, moving on. So that was the Seinfeld, the greatest sitcom ever. Well, there was a lawsuit, Costanza v. Seinfeld. And you think Costanza, George Costanza? No, Michael Costanza sued Jerry Seinfeld under the theory that Jerry based the character of George off of him.
Okay. No, George Costanza.
Right there.
Makes sense.
I'm thinking that's rather kind of stupid. I don't know. When you go to court, right? And there are several instances where you are raising your right hand and you are saying, I am telling you the God's honest truth. What I am about to say is so truthful, you could throw me in the slammer if I am fudging just a little bit, right? There are several instances when you have to plead. You are swearing to this under penalty of perjury. This is the truth. So what was Michael Costanza telling the entire world by filing this lawsuit? Look at that character, George. Look at him over there. He's short, he's fat, he's bald, he's ugly, he can't keep a job, he has no luck with women. Well, guess who was the inspiration for that character? That's right.
Amen. He
based that character off of moi. I am short, fat, bald, and ugly. Can't keep a job, haven't had a date in years. Yeah, I am not sure. He should be responsible for his own online dating profile. But yeah, that's why he's willing to throw himself under the bus as he was seeking hundreds of millions of dollars from Jerry Seinfeld. So what do you think? Do you think he has a claim?
No, but I would do the same. Anybody. Yeah. I mean, come on. $100 million self-respect. Yeah. I'll be happy with, I'll go respect myself in my new mansion and my Ferrari.
There you go. Well, the basis of the claim was invasion of his right to privacy. There are several torts under the right to privacy. One is misappropriation of likeness, and you cannot use someone else's likeness to endorse your commercial products or service. That would be invasion of their right to privacy.
Right.
And so that was the basis. The court said, no. Yes. Nope. You know, you said everyone has a public realm and you don't, you have a right to privacy, but it's not to the extent to prevent someone else like Seinfeld basing a character off of you in satire, in fiction. And so the court, one of the greatest one-liners of any legal opinion, wrote this: while a sitcom can be about nothing, a lawsuit has to be about something. And so then sanction Michael Costanza.
Zing.
See, exactly. Several thousand dollars for bringing this lawsuit. So there you go. That is from our, what was the, annals of our courtrooms
annals.
Past? Annals. Of legal annals. Decisions past.
Annals.
And I'll have to remember that name somehow. Yeah. And. All right. There you go. Speaking of, I have a hard time saying words correctly for some reason, Chris. I don't know why I actually make a living off of my public speaking when I can hardly even say a word. I recently went on this diet, and someone had advised me that, Joel, you need to do take this quinoa. Now, do you know what quinoa is?
Yeah, it's like a I can picture it in my head. It looks like couscous, but
rice,
it's like
gritty
like
thing.
Rice. Look at the yeah.
But I read it.
Q-U-I something.
Because this person didn't say quinoa. She wrote it out quinoa, right?
Yes.
It is not pronounced. I mean, you wouldn't think quinoa. And so I kept butchering it. Finally, my wife said, here's what you do. Agent Keen from the Blacklist TV show.
Okay.
I remember Keen. And then I like the Wawa gas station. So Agent Keen, Wawa gas, quinoa. Now I know how to say quinoa. But nonetheless, I have no idea how
good
I can
you.
Actually make money, pay the bills with my public speaking. It's just kind of one of these... shocks me.
I mean, you know Latin, right? you know, Propter Hawk, ergo Pro Hawk, like Pro Hawk Vice, right? Res ipsa loquitur. We know all the Latin. We're good there. But when it comes to like quinoa or couscous or, you know, it is what it is.
It is difficult. All right, moving on now.
Go on. One of the things, and I had a tutor when I was younger, similar thing, is she taught me that people who mispronounce words because they've read them and they've never heard them out loud is because English is such a stupid language in comparison to all the other languages, that when we sound out words, that how we've been taught as children to look at a word and sound it out, there's a chur sound, that chur, right? I before E and all that shenanigans, is that most people are using these really bad English rules of language to try to sound out and pronounce words. So every once in a while, or more often for some people, you're going to get a word wrong because you look at it, you sound it out as you were taught, and it's quinoa.
Not quinoa. Like,
not quinoa, like you were taught.
There you go. See, now I don't feel quite so stupid. I have some good basis for sounding the way that I sound. All right. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what? Speaking of crazy lawsuits, let's now move over to Trump's trial. This is now week two or week three, depending upon how you count that first week with the jury. Not much happened this week so far, but man, we are on the precipice of amazing things happen. But a couple things did happen that I wanted us to talk about. So last week you had, I believe the guy's name was Pecker, the National Enquirer executive who testified about the catch and kill arrangement that they had with the Trump administration, the Trump people. They would catch these stories and then they would kill them. And and then this week we had a couple of people testify. Gary Farrow testified, the banker from First Republic, that Michael Cohen wired money to Stormy Daniels. Okay, so we kind of know that. Chris, here's the other thing about these witnesses this week. There's no question. I mean, this should have been just conceded by all sides. We've moved this case along. No side is contesting that this went on. Keith Davidson, who is Karen McDougal's lawyer and Stormy Daniels' lawyer, testified that Michael Cohen was all involved in the arrangement of the hush money payments. Again, no one is denying that. So the witnesses that so far have come out are all talking about about this catch and kill approach, how Trump paid money. Again, no one is questioning that. Chris, from my perspective, this is a big yawn because this is all perfectly legal. Any surprise developments about with the witnesses so far?
No, it's all very foundational shenanigans. Like, they're just setting the stage for what? Who knows? But yeah, part of it is, and I know why the Trump team doesn't concede to all this stuff. And we've talked about it many a times, right? This isn't the Trump trial. This is the Trump marketing campaign. So the longer that they can stretch this trial out and keep it in the news, the better. If you or I were doing this, we would have conceded those points because time is money, right? The more time we're spending in court, we're taking away from our other clients, our other billables, our other things. So we would concede something to this effect of, yes, we know that Michael Cohen wired money. We don't need two witnesses and 3 days of testimony to talk about it.
So if you're following the Trump trial and you're trying to keep score so far, this is what we are looking for. We are looking for an other criminal act. This case cannot be based upon how the records were kept, though I think if Trump's lawyers were smart, they would definitely attack that and say that the records could have been kept in a legal way, and the person who did it, who did not keep them the proper way, was one Michael Cohen. More on him in just a bit. But that being said, let's even assuming the records were kept improperly, it has to be to conceal another crime. So what is this other crime? We really don't know. The indictment was very sloppy, very vague. And for some reason, Trump's lawyers didn't challenge that in a way that sent it up the appeals, changed and back down, and said, give us a more definite statement as to what this other criminal act is. Kind of makes you wonder why they didn't do that. But that's what we are all waiting for and looking for. What is this other criminal act? And that's what they're trying to develop. Is it some kind of a conspiracy to influence an election? Again, what is it? We want to know the details, because I can make the argument pretty easily that What do you mean a conspiracy to influence an election? Of course, it's what you do. You try to win an election. You have agreements with other people to try to win the election. So what does this look like? Spell it out for us. Where is the violation of the election code? Chris, you and I in podcast past have had to guess what that might possibly be. But we don't know because they have not spelled that out. That's why we are watching this case to see what is this other crime. But you and I are pretty good guessers, but nothing this last week really kind of shed light as to this other crime. Is that your take, or do you have a more nuanced, intelligent take?
I mean, again, this is the Trump marketing campaign. So our nuanced take, and I think it's going to run the entire time, is that guilty or not guilty, however the thing shakes out, is this is a win for Donald Trump all the way around. It's not... I mean, even if he's found guilty, that doesn't bar him from running for president. So that's not going to keep him off the ballot. People aren't going to not, people are going to either have already made up their mind whether they're voting for Donald Trump or not. It's not, this is one of those really weird presidential elections where you could have it any day of the week. There is no changing people's minds on who they're voting for at this point. There's no fence line voters when it comes to Donald Trump.
I want to agree with you, and I think I've even made similar statements before, but I am wondering if that actually is true, because now I will agree it's true for 95% of American, but we do have very short memories. We do not remember things that happened 4 years ago. Things change. What's in the current, what's in the news right now? Sometimes that has an undue impact on how you view matters. And so I do think that if this now is the story, what he did 4 years ago, what he did 8 years ago, that's so long ago in your memories. Now we're looking at what is the current issue. So might this case have a positive impact on Trump's candidacy if he's able to prove that his attackers, you know, one DA Bragg is really off his rocker, and this case turns out to be bogus? Will that not be a huge bump up to Trump's election campaign efforts? Because now what's in the news currently is Trump won a criminal trial in New York City. No, how can he win this criminal trial? With just not being convicted. So if one person holds out, he wins this criminal trial. And would that not be a huge bump up to Trump's candidacy? All right. You mentioned that this was a campaign effort, and I agree with that 100%. So to that end, I found it interesting what happened earlier this week. Judge Merchan fined Trump $9,000 on Tuesday morning for violating a gag order that banned him from speaking publicly about witnesses and family members of court officials. Chris, $9,000. That's cheap marketing right there. I mean, come on, $9,000 is what Trump had to pay to have all of these national news organizations run stories for all these, TV programs, news channels to run, specials on this. That was a really well spent $9,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the Trump campaigning marketing budget. $9,000. $9,000 is like a mailer to 3,000 people.
I know.
Like, and he's getting national attention, reaching millions of people. It is a calculated absolute action.
If I was running for county treasurer here in Johnson County, Kansas, I couldn't even send out a mailer for, like you said, for $9,000.
No.
And here he's running for president of the United States. This story went coast to coast worldwide, impacted every voter, and only cost him $9,000. That is some seriously good ROI.
It's so absurd, right? The point of a fine is to hurt a person's financial situation to the point where they do not continue to act in the same way that they are doing. So, and that's the point, right? That's the point of a speeding ticket. That's the point of any infraction, parking ticket, all of that stuff, which is what the equivalent is here. So why are you fining him such a little amount of money?
So you're saying
you really want to curb his behavior.
So you're saying the fine amount shouldn't be an enticement to commit the infraction. Absolutely. It should be a deterrent to committing the infraction. And here it is an enticement. I agree 100% with that. Now, it's also kind of interesting what happened right afterwards. So right after the judge ordered this $9,000 sanction, he did threaten next time might warrant jail time. Trump then went and took down the offending articles on there social media. So he showed he knew how to conform his actions to not violate the gag order. He wanted to violate the gag order, knowing it was only a $1,000 per violation maximum penalty. So why not spend that money when he could? And then he would just wait until the threat came of jail time before he reeled back his offensive conduct, or quote unquote offensive conduct, depending upon which side of the aisle you are on. All right, Chris, another interesting story from this last week was Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is the prosecution's star witness. I got to pause right there to kind of push back down the throw up that I wanted to throw. When your star witness is a convicted perjurer, you got to wonder, why are you bringing this case? Well, Chris, if things could not get worse for one Michael Cohen, and when I say could not get worse, he was convicted for lying, perjury, spent for this issue. All right, so that's your star witness. It got worse this last week because he goes on TikTok, mind you. By the way, he's going to be a witness, and I have heard, I have not read the court report, but I'm almost certain that the prosecution invoked the witness rule, which meant you are not supposed to be watching the proceedings because until you testify. That's the witness rule. Well, here, Michael Cohen then goes on TikTok and starts to comment on other witnesses' testimony. Hold on.
Did he do it in like a dance? Did he do like a TikTok dance and then did the testimony
thing? I went and watched some of these. I did not watch the entire hour-long live feeds that he did. I'm not saying he was dancing, but they were putting certain things on him. Like, you could put graphics and cute little images.
Filters.
And here's a problem with that. That actually cost money for the person to place it. So Michael Cohen is making money. And I found out that's the way you can monetize off of TikTok, is for people to give you money during your live feed by putting certain things on your video. And so he was monetizing. He was profiting off of his statements about this trial. Chris, if you were the defense lawyer in this case and you knew the other side's star witness was making comments about the trial, comments about the other witnesses during this trial, and was profiting off of said testimony, would that not be your dream? Is that not a wet dream for a defense attorney to have the prosecution's star witness do that kind of stuff?
I don't know if it's a wet dream there, trying to keep it clean over here, Joel. No, it's absolutely my favorite thing on the face of the planet, right? Like, you just, all of that's evidence now. All of that is character impeachment evidence, like basic character impeachment. Like, a third year law student could come in there and argue that, and it would be absolutely magical. This is why the U.S. government banned TikTok. Just saying. Michael Cohen ruins everything.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The fun videos, the dog videos. But here, this is real problem. This is very problematic for the prosecution. Their star witness is just the defense. Assuming the defense has decent lawyers, they're going to just run roughshod over Michael Cohen, and they are really going to expose. Because here's why I think this is important.
But the whole thing's a circus. That's the point of this whole thing, is that it's a circus.
It is. And I have to think there will be some jurors, they're going to view this case through the prism of, what does the law require? What do I think?
Right.
So they are going to be asked, where is this other crime, this other conspiracy? Where is it? Well, what it's going to go down to is how Michael Cohen did his job. That's going to be one of the critical parts of this case. Who was in charge of recording these payments? Right. And how they recorded these payments, and what Michael Cohen is a central figure in the prosecution's case. And I would think the juror is going to say, no, Michael Cohen, you're not believable. You are the most opportunist. You're the chief opportunist of all opportunists. And so I can't believe a single thing that comes out of your mouth. And I think this is really going to be damaging to his case, to the prosecution's case.
Yeah. You just need one, right? the uphill battle with this one specifically is that you need 12 to convict, and you need a perfect 12. Any deviation from that and Trump wins.
Yes.
Right. Even if it comes back a hung jury, you know Trump's going to get out there and go like, I was acquitted. Innocent man.
I think from the public's perspective, a hung jury is absolutely a win for Trump. I absolutely believe that.
Everything's a win for Trump. Trump gets convicted, it's a win for Trump. Well, because then he gets to go back in the news for his appeal.
I do.
If he gets acquitted, it's a win for Trump. Everything's a win for Trump.
I agree so far, that's true. But I do not like the image. If I were an independent voter or someone whose minds could be made up, I believe Trump getting handcuffed and being put in jail could be too much. Because you would assume he did something wrong because a jury convicted him. Now, I could see through that and say, well, no, they did this in downtown Manhattan, got a very much a biased jury against him, and it was baked in cake. But I could see how this could cost him the election if he is convicted, because people won't give him that benefit of the doubt, and they'll say, you were convicted, you are a criminal, and that imagery could be enough to cost him the election. But if he wins this trial, and clearly a hung jury is a win for Trump, it's going to have the exact opposite effect. So, Democrats, you have now hung your hope of the next election on one D.A. Bragg. And I would not be very excited about that.
Well, and Biden's doing some stuff right now, right? He's descheduling, and we'll talk about this in a later episode because it's kind of a big deal. But he's going to deschedule marijuana from a Schedule 1 drug down to a Schedule 3.
I heard about that.
Right? And so that's been the argument for a lot of conservative courts and a lot of attorneys general to say, hey, your medicinal marijuana packages or you legalizing recreational marijuana in your state, that goes against federal statute. We're not going to enforce it, right? The Obama administration was big on we're not going to enforce it. And the Trump administration really didn't care because weed is whatever for some presidents. But with the descheduling of it, it allows for the marijuana industry, the cannabis industry, to really then ratchet up what they can do and add things like being able to open a bank account for all their money. So it lowers the crime rate. So that's going to, some we'll talk about in a later episode, but Biden can see the writing on the wall that if this does go south, right, if Trump gets acquitted, right, which the good, better, best, right? The best outcome for Joe Biden is Trump gets convicted. A good outcome, hung jury, you can have that debate. Worst outcome for Joe Biden, full-on acquittal, right? 12 voting, he's innocent.
That would be horrible. That would be horrible
Horrible for Biden, right? So it's this middle ground of a hung jury, which I think you and I are both in agreement on. It's going to be a hung jury, I think. I don't think you're going to get 12 people either way are going to go guilty or not guilty on Donald Trump. So this allows each side what they want to be able to spin it.
It will be, and then both sides can fundraise off of this, and it's been a huge win for both sides. Then let's go into the next election. All right. So speaking of Donald Trump, the Supreme Court jumped in onto the Trump trial issue this last week with a hearing. And so this involved the presidential immunity case. And so what happened here was that Trump was indicted in August 2023 on four counts arising from special counsel Jack Smith's investigation into the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol. I say attacks because I'm reading from a report about this matter. I do not believe they were attacks on the U.S. Capitol. But that being said, I've talked about that before and I can talk about that again. But you know what I'm talking about? The January 6th incident. I call it a redneck convention because that's what it looked like, and you don't attack the U.S. Capitol with zero weapons. But that being said, this indictment that was based upon on the January 6th event, Trump argued that he should be immune from anything that happened while he was president, and his arguments were very broad. It's like it doesn't matter what I did if I was the president. I should be immune. The only way you can bring charges against a president is to impeach him, convict him based upon that impeachment, and then you can have a criminal case based upon that impeachment conviction. That was Trump's argument. So this was going to go to trial in March of this year. Well, that all got stayed and delayed as the Supreme Court then took up this issue. And you and I have discussed this before. Chris, here was my take after listening to the 3-hour oral argument. Are you ready for my take?
No. Yeah.
The Supreme Court is listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yes. Because we nailed it. Absolutely. Our arguments, what we have said about this case, was exactly what the Supreme Court asked questions about. We raised the issues, and the Supreme Court says, thank you, Chris and Joel, for informing us as to this issue, this matter. We will now conduct a 3-hour hearing based upon your comments. Chris, it was that close to our podcast.
It was legit. Look, I think we're pretty smart guys, but I'm also going to point out that, like, this is not, like, Stevie Wonder could see the writing on the wall. Like, this is not, you and I are not on the cutting edge of what this defense should be. Like, though, yes, we talked about it. I think that it's the same thing as, like, saying, do you think the Chiefs are going to extend Travis Kelce's contract after 2 back-to-back Super Bowls? Well, you know, Joel, the writing's on the wall that he's the greatest tight end of all time. Like, everybody's going to have that argument.
Dude, Travis Kelce has got the worst agent in the history of sports. Now, I'm kidding about that. But Travis Kelce should have gone to the Chiefs and said, look, I have really performed well for you. We have now won 3 Super Bowls, and I am one of the key, pegs here, cogs to this Super Bowl team. Oh, and did I mention who I'm dating?
Taylor Swift.
I mean, come on. He just needs to lead off with who he is dating. The chief officials will say, what does that mean for our merchandise
revenue
sales?
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, yeah. We more than doubled your salary with merchandise sales. How much money do you want? Yeah,
right.
He can get all kinds of money.
But that aside, you're right. We're smart guys, and definitely the Supreme Court is listening to our podcast. Or they are basic legal scholars on the basics of basic law.
All right. I'm not buying what you're saying right there. I see your mouth is moving. I have now cut you off. No, we are scholars. They are listening to our podcast. All right.
Let's
unpack how. And then I will tell you the one argument that I missed that I think should be dispositive, though it very well might not be. All right, first of all, what did we get right? You and I were both in agreement that they were going to split the baby. In other words, Trump was saying, I am absolutely immune. I am the president of the United States. Now, I kind of understood his argument in that if he is the president and he goes down the Constitution has something in the impeachment power or the impeachment provision where the House could impeach him, the Senate could convict him. That seems to be in the Constitution how you handle, presidential misconduct. All right.
Yep.
But if he walks down the street and just pulls out a gun and shoots someone, why should he have immunity from that?
Right.
That seemed to be outrageous and crazy. So we were talking about they need to separate his public from his private acts. That's what we said. So if he was acting ostensibly under his presidential powers, under his presidential duties, he will have the immunity. So if he orders a strike on some other world leader, ostensibly he's not ordering that strike as a private citizen. He's ordering that strike as the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military. Therefore, no one can sue him for those acts.
For those murders, yeah.
Another example that was given is involving the current president of the United States. He said, for example, President Joe Biden could be charged with unlawfully inducing immigrants to enter the United States illegally through the border control policies. Well, if Biden adopted border control policies that other people then cross over the border with, that would be a presidential act. That would be through his president. He's misusing his presidential powers, but he would have the immunity for doing that. That was an actual example that was brought up during oral argument. So the question is he acting as ostensibly as president, or is he just simply acting, as a private citizen or, outside of his presidential powers?
Right.
Chris,
that's a rough determination, right? It's an easy determination, right? I ordered the 7th Fleet into the Arabian Sea to open fire on, Bahrain. Okay, clear. As a private citizen, you do not have the authority to order the 7th Fleet to the bathroom, right, let alone to open fire on Bahrain.
Exactly.
So that's an easy delineation of presidential powers. I signed a pardon of a murderer, and he went out and murdered somebody. That's under your presidential powers, right?
Clearly presidential powers, right.
So, okay. So then you come back to January 6th and go, I held a campaign rally. Okay, well, if it's a campaign rally, is that really under your presidential powers? And at that campaign rally, people got a little feisty. They walked over to the Capitol. They attempted to enter a building they were told not to come into, and someone died. Is that an official presidential act?
Interesting.
And that's
a real good example. Let's analyze that example. Right. So if he's holding a private campaign rally to become the next president,
right,
that ostensibly would be as a private person, because that's campaigning.
Right.
But let's say he then orders security for said rally. Okay, hold on. Now that's using both powers here, because him providing security would be as a president, and he can provide security for his own event. So that would be a good example of where he would be acting both in his private capacity and also in his public capacity. Chris, there are some other examples that were mentioned as well. For example, what if the president took a bribe to enter some kind of foreign treaty? Okay, you can't take a bribe. That would be illegal. He has no powers to take bribe. It's explicitly prohibited in the Constitution.
Yeah.
Okay, so is that a public act or a private act? The entering the treaty is public, no doubt about it. Doing in conjunction with a bribe, the bribe would then be private. So Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, even posited, how would that get litigated? Would you have to bring an indictment that said you accepted a bribe, but then not tell the jury what for?
What's the bribe? Yeah.
How would you even do that?
Right. Well, gosh, yeah. And yeah, boy, howdy. Yeah. And what if we were already entering into the treaty to begin with? Right. Let's take NAFTA, right? North America Free Trade Alliance, right? Canada, U.S., Mexico. We've entered into a trade agreement. We're coming up on renewing the trade agreement, right? You have to do it every 5 years, renewing the trade agreement. Donald Trump changed NAFTA to the USMCA or something like that, I believe. What if he took a bribe to do something he does in his normal course of business as president?
Yes.
And it had absolutely no effect on anything, because this is what what if he took a bribe? What if he took an outside payment to speak at Congress at the State of the Union?
Right. Or here's another example that is not going to cause you to stretch your mind that far. What if he was on a phone call with a certain Ukrainian leader and he was asking about their investigation into his political enemy, Joe Biden? And so, hey, you know what? I know we got some funding you were getting. Yeah, it's kind of in the works, but let's put that to the side for a second and let's talk about what you are doing to stop corruption. If he is trying to get the Ukrainian leader to open up an investigation against his political rival, that is gray area to say the least. And then holding up a payments that otherwise should go to him. Okay, that might be an act as a president on how you administer certain kinds of funding. So you can see how there's a lot of middle ground. Chris, here's what I found amazing about this hearing. So before this hearing, Trump's team took the broad ground. They were arguing, look, the president has very broad powers. They have immunity for all acts while president, not just presidential acts, but if the calendar says you are still the president, you shoot someone in Times Square, impeachment is still the only answer. Right. You go and impeach him for that. And then a criminal trial. You cannot just hold a criminal trial. Otherwise, it could be abused and perverted by your political enemies. That was his argument. His lawyer, before the Supreme Court stepped back, the biggest step I've ever
backpedaled.
Seen. He basically said, there are some private acts with which the president does not have immunity. I'm like, does your client know what you just said? Did he authorize you to say that? So I'm pretty sure your client has been saying other things. Chris, I find it fascinating that during oral argument, Trump's lawyer scaled back immensely on this broad immunity claim. Why did he do that? Well, there's a couple options.
It's not a winning argument.
That,
right? Because you you and I just sat here and went through like three cases where, you know, and you've argued at the Supreme Court level, you never come in with absolutes, never come in with there's an absolute right and an absolute wrong, because there is gray area for everything in the law. And that's the point.
There is. And I think the reason why he did that was, again, you are before the Supreme Court. You got to save face. You can't seem uncredible, or you will lose the justice and you'll lose them quickly. So he couldn't present these nonsensical arguments. He knows it's not really going to do him any favors. And plus, what is his real objective here? What is Trump's real objective? The stall game, to push this back. And so what was Trump's lawyer doing here by conceding this ground? He basically was saying, look, we need to have a hearing where we decide what of his acts were private and which of his acts were public. What does that mean? Yeah. Well, two things, but most likely it means another hearing and another round of appeals, because it's going to go back and some trial judge is going to have to decide which of his acts were public, which of his acts were private. Trump could then appeal that decision and it'll go back up to the D.C. Circuit and up to the U.S. Supreme Court. This will be 2 years down the road. So if it does go down this road of another hearing, then Trump is going to win the stall game. It's going to take another 2 years. Because here's what's interesting, though, about that approach. Trump's lawyers seem to admit that there were certain things in this case where he acted as a private citizen. So might now the prosecutor look at the admissions and say, we're just going to bring a claim based upon those admissions?
Yeah, maybe. You just got to win one, right? People think, and it's part of the culture, right? It's part of our culture right now, is that you need to swing for the fences and you need to hit a home run. You just need to win one. All you need to do is win one against Donald Trump, and you've won them all. That's it. It's the Al Capone tax evasion discussion, right? So, you get them where you get them.
So, as you're speaking of Al Capone, I'll talk about that here a little bit later, because I had a great, great golfing trip last weekend where I went to Al Capone's home territory there in Hot Springs, Arkansas. It was amazing.
Wow.
The hotel I stayed at actually had the Al Capone suite. So Al Capone, that was one of his favorite vacationing spots, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they had an agreement amongst the various crime families that they could go to Hot Springs and no one would do a hit there, because they wanted to
neutral
keep Hot Springs off limits, because they all enjoyed Hot Springs. And so the hotel I stayed at, they even had an agreement, no weapons would be kept on the premise of the Arlington Hotel. Have you seen John Wick?
Yeah.
Where they have the hotel where they couldn't bring in guns. Yes.
Bring guns. You just could not perpetuate violence on the ground.
That's what this place was. The Continental, where no guns were allowed, no hits on this premity. And Al Capone had his own suite there where he could see out and see if there were any trouble coming, and he could make a quick getaway. I'll talk more about the gangster life and the laws that apply to that on a later podcast. But back to this case, because here was a very fascinating argument that was made by my favorite justice, Clarence Thomas. Why is he my favorite justice? Because he is a huge Nebraska Cornhusker fan. But he asked the question whether or not, so Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas raised the question that goes to the heart of Special Counsel Jack Smith's charges against Donald Trump. So during the question, he asked, did you in this litigation challenge the appointment of the special counsel? Here's the problem. Apparently, the special counsel was never appointed by the Senate. He was never confirmed by the Senate.
I love that. Who appointed Ken Starr to investigate Bill Clinton?
Okay, so I don't have the exact answer for that one, but we'll get to that in just a bit, because Kavanaugh did mention that as being a problem. Yeah. But here's the problem. I believe Ken Starr was actually a U.S. attorney. Here, he's not even a U.S. attorney. The Senate never approved this guy. Ever.
Nope.
And so because of that, he was never appointed, never confirmed. And so it was just the Attorney General's office that wanted some independent or some private lawyer to bring charges against Donald Trump. And so Clarence Thomas was asking, where is the authority here to bring this matter to actually that gives Jack Smith the power to prosecute this case. And so Kavanaugh, by the way, you mentioned Ken Starr.
Yeah.
Kavanaugh was on that team. He was on Ken Starr's team that brought those charges against Bill Clinton. He said it was probably the biggest mistake to allow the Attorney General's office to bring this matter against Bill Clinton during the time. Yeah. It gave the AG's office way too much power, the Attorney General way too much power to interrupt the responsibilities and the job of the presidency. So might this be an effort by Kavanaugh and Thomas to say, look, Jack Smith has no power at all to bring the charge. He's not even a U.S. attorney. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, because they didn't have a problem when Ken Starr did it. Because Ken Starr wasn't a U.S. attorney at the time. He was private counsel, and he was appointed by Janet Reno, who was the who was Clinton's AG at the time, to investigate Bill Clinton.
Okay.
The tradition has been, and whether or not it's based in law or not, is that you appoint a member of the opposite party, you appoint a member of the opposite party to investigate a sitting president. And so the time that we didn't see that was with Robert Mueller, because he was a Republican and he was investigating Donald Trump when he was a Republican. But there hasn't been, even Nixon's attorney was not appointed by the Senate to investigate Richard Nixon. Though that should have been, right? The law could have been followed that way. Tradition has not followed it. And Thomas was on the bench when Bill Clinton was being investigated. He was on the bench when Robert Mueller was investigating Donald Trump the first time, and he only brings it up now. And I don't think that Thomas had some sort of revelatory act. And I think Kavanaugh has always preached we shouldn't be doing this. This should not be doing, like, I think Kavanaugh even preached that. And look, I'm not a Kavanaugh fan, but I think that Kavanaugh preached this sermon constantly that we have no power to do this under these attorneys. We have no power.
Which is interesting, because Kavanaugh was actually one of those attorneys prosecuting Bill Clinton. And maybe he saw, look, we were doing this for maybe improper purposes.
Yep.
And so it really does give that person, that prosecutor, way too much power to interrupt the activities of the president. And with Bill Clinton, you know, did he get a blowjob for, I'm really not making this this podcast here kid friendly, but
no,
you
know, you're
did
not.
He get sexual favors from Monica Lewinsky? You know,
sure.
I mean,
yes. Who
really?
Yeah, he did. He totally did. He did. Like,
I know.
And look. And we had a president that, you know, engaged in sexual congress with a adult film star, and John F. Kennedy cheated all the time and was running women up and down and in and out. I think Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and Barack Obama are the only people who did not cheat on their wives while they were in office. Like, you know, but I also think that engaging in sexual activity has a very different, has a very different holding or status than inciting a riot to overturn an election.
So I think Kavanaugh's point is he maybe recognized how it was used. He saw how it was used from the inside. And that's why Kavanaugh now is on board with saying that was one of our biggest mistakes, is the court should not have given the special prosecutor in that situation that kind of power when, you know, has not been confirmed and it was abused. I mean, I'm reading between the lines here on what Kavanaugh's thinking, but since Kavanaugh was one of those lawyers, and he does have some inside information on that. That'll be a very interesting, I'm going to guess, concurring opinion, because I do not believe it's going to be the majority opinion, but I believe he will let his opinion be known as to how this whole process was abused. Again, I think that carries extra weight since he would have been on the side of the abusers at one point in time in his career. All right. That is all we have now for the Trump update, if you will, from this past week. And so, Chris, we have a couple more minutes here. Are there any sports matters you want to talk about before we sign off?
I mean, Big Yeti, Travis Kelce got his contract extension. Ezekiel Elliott's going back to the Cowboys with that trade. The NFL draft was a blah. There's nothing fun hold about on, the NFL draft hold on. This year.
No. I'm going to have to stop you right there. You were making sense, and then you just went off the cliff again. Chris, what are you doing? Oh, it's the cold medicine you're taking.
Nah, yeah. No, the NFL draft was a bust this year. Like, there was no big trades. There was a
huge trade. Let me just spell it out for you.
Drama.
The Chiefs now just won the next four Super Bowls, and no one can stop it. Did you see what happened with the Chiefs pick? So let's unpack this here just a bit. Come back here. All right, we lost you here. The Buffalo Bills sorely need a wide receiver. They just lost Diggs to whoever. I don't even know where Diggs went, but I know he left Buffalo, right? And I believe their second receiver left Buffalo. Buffalo needs a wide receiver. Well, there was a wide receiver in this draft who has the fastest speed in the history of the draft. Now I say that because there was a combine, and you clock how fast these receivers are, and this receiver set the record for having the fastest combine time in history. That includes Tyreek Hill. That's how fast this guy, who goes by the nickname Flash, I wonder how he got that nickname, was blazingly fast. So the Buffalo Bills are on the clock, and they need a wide receiver. What do? They trade that pick to the Kansas City Chiefs. What? Your biggest rival, the Kansas City Chiefs, as far as the hindrance between you getting to the Super Bowl, the Kansas City Chiefs. You're going to allow the Kansas City Chiefs to draft this receiver. Chris, I have no idea why they did that.
Look, there was a couple of those head scratchers, right? Like, we knew Marvin Harrison was going to go to the Cardinals, right? We knew the first four picks for sure. Yes. I'm not a Cardinals fan. I'm a Niners fan.
You live there. What are you talking about?
Dude, I don't go. I have flown from Phoenix to Santa Clara to go see a Niners game. I will not even go to a 50-yard line on the field ticket at a Cardinals game.
There you go. You are a smart man.
Yeah, Cardinals are a waste of time. So I felt like the first four picks were pretty good. I think the first big pick that kind of freaked me out was Michael Penix. And I know I'm pronouncing Penix wrong because all the memes online, but why did Atlanta draft a quarterback after they just guaranteed Kurt $100 million?
You know what? I think this was a brilliant move by Atlanta, but here's what it also signaled to their current team. We know you don't got it. We just signed Kirk one playoff win Cousins. And the reason why they signed Kirk one playoff win Cousins is they want to be respectable, but they know Kirk Cousins is not going to ever win them the Super Bowl. So, but often you don't say that explicitly. You don't just admit that you just signed the guy for hundreds of millions of dollars. But we know we're really not going to win. We just want to be competitive on a week to week basis. But with this draft of drafting another quarterback at number eight, you're admitting Kirk Cousins is never going to get us to the promised land, or else why would you waste these next 4 years? You would draft a receiver, you know, someone who actually could help out Cousins, score some points, win some games. But no, this definitely was a play for the future and a loud statement that we are going nowhere as a franchise soon.
Right. Well, and then Kansas City traded up to get the 28th pick. Okay. So you got Xavier at 28. I know that you think the world of Xavier, right? He's the Flash. But two other wide receivers went before him. So did Kansas City get a good receiver? Absolutely. I think he'll do great things because Kansas City has a great system set up for him to do great things. But, man, the draft was boring. It was just boring. Like,
it was.
Dude, and Bo Nix going at, like, what do you go, at 11 or 12? The Broncos picking up Zach Wilson, and then they're picking up Bo Nix. Like, what are you doing, Sean? Like, I got nothing. I was just bored.
Well, there you go. Well, that is this week's Debriefing the Law. A lot of fun. I actually got to get going to my dentist appointment. I realized time is short. So, hey, have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week, Joel.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a complete and utter mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. Brooke Bolin for our marketing efforts, and Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.